Blog Talk Radio.
You know, I'd be lost without that goat. Good evening and welcome to Erie House, oldie, tiny radio, show a gajillion. No, I don't know. It's 711 overall for Erie House, and I forget which number for Erie House, oldie, tiny. It matters not. We're all here having fun. I'm Dale Kay from Spook Show, here along with
Dave Binkley from Weird News, Really Bad Movies, Spaceship One, and from Sleep Deprivation. We're all here to have fun.
Yeah, that's right. And we will not deprive you of sleep stories, that's for sure. We got three of them. Three, count them. And that's just tonight.
Three.
Another one tomorrow.
Yeah. Good old Mystery Theater tomorrow night. But tonight, we got us some suspense. We got us some crisis. And we have some inter-sanctum mysteries.
Oh, boy, oh, boy, oh, boy, oh, boy. It'll be a blast. It always is with Boggs Bane, good old Bob, here with us. Who knows? Maybe GGSI Paper will stop in tonight as well in the chat. And God knows who's listening.
Hey, wake up,
that
wake
we
up,
can't
Boggs.
See.
Wake up, Boggs.
You know, besides wake you up, nice folks who leave comments on my page and on the Erie House page, or anybody who's reached out to Dave or Gar, you know, if you want to make your presence known, you can always call us, especially when we're yabbering like this. All you can do is dial 646-378-0264, and you can join us. Much
one of our co-hosts
has just done. It's the lovely, the delightful.
We can call her intelligent, but she keeps calling in here, so that we can't give her that label.
Oh, darn. Well, I'm not quite sure how to take that. So, but tis me, CW. Greetings, felicitations, salutations, exaltations, and howdy, everybody.
Oh, this is how you have to take that, CW. You hang around Dale and I long enough, you lose IQ points.
Yes.
Oh, ouch. Just lost one right now. Just flittered away. Oh.
Well, if it's like mine, just use the kitchen towel and pick it up and you're good.
Oh, okay. Well,
Nobody saw anything.
Oh, yeah. Got it with the Swiffer. There you go. Oh, dear.
Oh, my.
You'll catch up
sounding
to us
good
when
tonight,
you get
the
involuntary drooling. Then you're set.
What was that there, Dave? I did not hear
I was just saying you're sounding very good tonight.
Yes.
Oh, thank you very much. I have my continental accent in tow with me, so everything is tickety-boo.
Perfect.
There you
go. And we got to stay awake for this one tonight. We got three sleepy tales. But they're more like sleepers because they'll be exciting. I trust in that.
Yeah, interesting. I don't know where you wish to start, but
at the beginning.
Yeah, one is about not sleeping ever, which is kind of a slogan of a company.
Ooh,
CW would catch that one. We never sleep. Who's that?
Oh,
who's that slogan of?
Well, we never sleep.
Yep.
We never sleep. We never sleep. Let's see.
FedEx.
We never sleep. Alarm
the
is an alarm.
Association.
Alarm system.
Okay. Well, I had heard that slogan before. But you guys, you know, when you hear it, you're going to slap yourself in the forehead. But so that's why maybe we should start off with crisis tonight for the man who never slept.
Sure, why not? We could start with that one. What was the name of the company, Dave?
Yeah.
Oh, shall I tell you?
Yes, please.
The Pinkerton Detective Agency. The Pinkerton Detective Agency.
Ah.
The big, the ones that have that big eye, and underneath it, it says, "We never sleep."
Yeah.
Oh,
it was their slogan
private.
So that they could use to tell people that we're on the job 24/7.
I think the Little Rascals used the same emblem. I think they stole the logo.
They did, but they took naps, so that didn't count.
Yes. I just remember that logo in the clubhouse. Yeah.
Oh, was that the He-Man Women Haters Club?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's the one.
I think Darla at one point kicked that door down.
Probably did.
Yep.
But, yeah, when I think of a private eye, Pinkertons, I always think, I know Pinkertons, they always seem so elitist. I mean, I think of private eyes like such as Sam Spade or...
Yeah. You know, they're gritty. They're
diamond.
Down
yeah.
to earth. Yeah.
Exactly. They're gritty. They're Seamus. They're a gumshoe. They're rumpled.
Unclean.
They're eating... Yeah, they're chewing on Rye Crisp and swilling down black coffee.
Rye Crisp.
Oh, and a quick nod to our sponsors before we get started. We have a makeup company that's sponsoring us tonight. So,
okay.
You know, when you can't tell, maybe it's Cabaline. Maybe it's a dude.
Maybe.
Okay. So,
were they born with it or was it plastic surgery? No, it's Cabaline.
Cabaline. That's right. Work on that for a while. All right. I like the idea of starting with Crisis. This one will keep you awake like the man who never slept.
Yes, and this just happens to be episode number 101, and it comes to us from March 18th of 1976.
Ooh, 101.
Still got it.
The Golden West Radio Network presents Crisis.
Goat's having a crisis.
Only young children and trained dogs have any real cause to play dead, I suppose, although there's nothing playful about death. We can assume their motives at least are quite innocent.
What's your
fault? What about the adult who plays dead? There's something strange and ominous in that. For as adults, we come to respect death. It will come to us all soon enough, so why provoke it? Why tempt it? But there are those who are unimpressed and unintimidated by the aspect of life's final mystery. Such are the men we shall meet in tonight's story. Two men who realize that while death cannot be cheated, it can be fooled. It's a macabre tale, best told with a hint of humor. Gallows humor, that is. I'll return in a minute with a baffling tale of suspense as Crisis presents Jeffrey David Bohm's gothic drama titled The Man... Who never slept. It is near the end of the last century. We are in a cold and confining stone prison cell occupied by two men. One of them nervously prepares to leave while the other man watches, thankful that he is to be left behind.
What time is it?
Well, they took my watch, but as a guess, I'd say it's right on 7 o'clock.
They're right on time.
They always are.
I'm afraid it's time, sir.
Quite all right. I've been up for hours.
Well, old fellow, good luck in the next world.
And good luck to you in this one.
I'm only sorry our friendship was so short-lived. Perhaps we'll meet again.
Perhaps. I would say it's a certainty.
Yes, I suppose so, but you'll have to be patient.
Oh, I have all the time in the world. Shall we go, Warden? So this is what it's like. I've often wondered. At least a dozen men have made this gallows walk on my account. And now I am one of them. How is it that I now find myself in this unlikely situation? Or you might well ask. And I'll tell you. It all has to do with that young gentleman with whom I have just exchanged such pleasant farewells. His name is Marion Thigpen. A curious name. But then Mr. Thigpen is a curious sort of fellow. Indeed, curious is a far too charitable description. For the man is a fiend, perhaps the greatest villain I've ever known. The year was 1889. Marion Thigpen was a second-year medical student at the Ann Arbor Doctors College, and, from what I understand, a most promising student at that. He shared a small room near the campus with one Reginald Greenleaf Allworthy. Reggie to his friends. A lad notably lacking in good sense, as you shall shortly discover. It was on a warm August night that the villainy buried deep inside Marion Thigpen's heart first began to surface.
Reggie, are you awake?
Hmm?
Listen carefully to me, Reggie. Are you listening?
Hmm.
Good. I think you'll be very interested in what I have to say. I was assigned a cadaver in school today, Reggie, that, with all due respect, resembles you in a most uncanny way. It occurred to me that you had recently taken out a $10,000 life insurance policy. Now, if you were to make me the beneficiary of the policy, and if that cadaver were found in your bed tomorrow morning, well, dear Reggie, need I go on? We both would realize a very handsome profit of $5,000 on the arrangement.
Well, Reggie sat bolt upright in his bed. He was failing in his classes anyway, and perhaps this was just the thing to avoid the embarrassment and dishonor of being expelled. Certainly his family would think so. And besides, a young man in his prime can have quite a time of it on $5,000. That very night, as Reggie waited outside in a horse-drawn cart borrowed from a local merchant, Marion broke into the school morgue where the cadavers were kept.
There we go. Nice and easy.
There they were, laid out on the cold cement floor like so many baby whales washed up on shore. There were 20 cadavers in all, each one covered by a heavy gray sheet. Even the strongest and most callous of men might have stopped and reconsidered at this point, but not Marion. He hesitated not a bit, but began immediately to pull away each sheet one by one.
No. No. Well, not you either. Reggie, where are you, Reggie, old boy? Ah, the last one. You might know.
Then, as if he were the devil himself carting off the damned, Marion lifted the cadaver up and threw him across his shoulder.
Up we go.
In less than a moment, man and corpse were safely outside.
Reggie, back the wagon over. Come on, back it up. Hold it. Hold it right there. Come on, fellow. In you go. Shove off, Reggie. The sun's almost up.
That morning, the bell in the campus tower sounded the death knell. Several members of Reggie's fraternity sported black armbands for a day or so, and a moment of silence was observed during lunch. Attendance at the chapel services was disappointing, and Marion would have it no other way. The less attention, the better. Later that day, an insurance inspector arrived to check the body, and being young and inexperienced and not much inclined to his sordid job, positive identification was made almost immediately, and the check for $10,000 arrived in the mail the following week. The split was made, and the two men parted company far happier and more prosperous than when they had first met. Marion disappeared totally, but Reggie turned up several months later in New York City, at the Rat's Tail Tavern, to be exact. The notorious Rat's Tail Tavern, gathering place for the worst thieves and cutthroats Hell's Kitchen had to offer.
It's true, I tell you. I beat the blood-sucking insurance company. They buried a cadaver. Well enough, but it wasn't me. Because here I am, right?
One of the customers in the tavern was a tough named Patrick Donovan. He'd been listening to Reggie's bragging talk and sidled up to him and took his arm.
Your story fascinates me, laddie, but it's too noisy in here to do much talking. Tell you what, there's a nice little restaurant down the street away. Why don't we put a bit of food in our stomachs? And the treat's on me.
But it wasn't food that Donovan planned to put in Reggie's stomach. No, it was his fist.
Tell me his name. The name of that genius friend of yours. Or I'll leave you dead in this alleyway.
Marion. Marion Thigpen.
And where can I find this Marion Thigpen? Tell me, quick.
Baltimore.
Baltimore, huh? Thanks, laddie. Thanks a lot. Oh, one more thing. I'll take whatever you got left of that $5,000.
It wasn't much. Only $600. But Donovan took it. There was a train leaving for Baltimore the next day, and Donovan took that, too. He held a small pad in his hand and wrote the same name several times. Marion Thigpen. Marion Thigpen. Curious name, he thought. Shouldn't have any trouble remembering a name like that. Shouldn't have trouble finding a man with a name like that, either. Donovan arrived in Baltimore and checked into the Alexander Hotel. He had a light lunch and then began asking questions. As expected, Marion Thigpen proved to be anything but difficult to find. As a matter of fact, he was staying in the Regency Hotel directly across the street. And Donovan located a comfortable bench in the small park next to the hotel and began his vigil. Several hours later, Marion appeared from the hotel lobby dressed in the height of fashion, frock coat, high hat, cloak, and cane. Heads turned as he made his way down the boulevard. Donovan mashed his cigar into the ground and followed. He followed Marion to the home of Judge Leon Toomey, where Marion called on the judge's charming niece, Rebecca Lynn Toomey. He followed them to a restaurant, and he followed them to the opera. He followed them all night, in fact, and in no way tried to hide the fact that he was doing so. He made quite a show of it, actually, taking every opportunity of catching Marion's eye. Finally, Marion could tolerate it no more.
Will you excuse me, please?
Marion rose from his chair, crossed the crowded cafe, and took a seat at Donovan's table.
Listen here. I don't know who you are, but I have a pretty good idea of what you want, and I will not allow you to harass me this way.
You must have made a mistake, laddie.
Please, don't insult me. You've made yourself perfectly obvious all evening. Who employed you? Veronica? Marie?
I'm afraid I never had the pleasure.
Look here, then. If you haven't been sent to find me by one of my wives, then
one
who?
One of your wives? My, my, you have been a naughty boy.
Who are you?
I've brought you a message.
A message? From whom?
From a dead man.
I don't understand.
I've brought you a message from Reggie Allworthy.
Reggie Allworthy?
Here's where I'm staying. Be there at 1 o'clock this morning.
Oh, a letter from a dead man. Ghostwriter. Yuck, 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 yuck.
Yeah, that's one slow post office. One slow post office.
Whoa. That's right. Oh, my goodness. Part one of The Man Who Never Slept.
Hmm. Intriguing.
Cool music in this one. There's some cool, groovy music.
Yeah, and I recognize, I was trying to think where I heard this music from before, but yeah, it's a... It's familiar to me. I'm trying to think where that's from. Gar usually finds it from, he finds a lot of time from places like Dark Shadows. This is not from Dark Shadows. This is one I can recall from somewhere.
Yeah, I couldn't pick up on it. And you know I like my movie music.
Yes.
To listen to it again, but it sounds a tad, a little bit like, I don't know if you're familiar with the Dark Shadows knockoff. It was the Canadian version of Dark Shadows. Called Strange Paradise.
No, I'm not familiar with that.
Oh, well, it's called Strange. Yes. The Canucks would not rest because Dark Shadows was such a hit in U.S., so they did their own version called Strange Paradise. It's on YouTube. It's not bad, actually.
I bet Gar knows about it. If not, we better
show
him.
Yeah.
Oh, Gar, do I actually know something that you don't know? I doubt it.
I don't know. Your knowledge base is pretty broad. You've surprised us with things we didn't know.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Again, is that a compliment? Because I don't.
but you remember, your IQ goes down the longer you're with us, so be careful.
Yeah, that's your out.
Yep. Oh dear. Now I know what those tinfoil hats are for, to keep my IQ intact.
I need another
layer of Reynolds wrap on my head.
Reynolds wrap? I'll have to try that. Reynolds wrap. On me head yet.
But I am. Oh, yes. Well, those geeks knew what they were talking about, tinfoil. You don't want those signals coming from outer space or Parma.
Suck up your brains. Or Parma. Did somebody say Parma?
Did you? No, you didn't say Parma. Hi, yes, another Cleveland tradition.
Oh, yes, I think we did say Parma.
Yes, we must have. Another Cleveland tradition. Ah, yes. That's all we do here is polka and eat kielbasa.
Hey. Oh, and the kishkas as well.
And run like hell on Dingus Day.
Yep.
Run like hell. Especially if you are in the He-Man Woman Haters Club.
That's true.
There you are.
Everything comes full circle. On Erie House. All roads lead to Erie House.
Because we're no squares.
No. We're too round
exactly.
For that. Me and you, Dave.
I know.
Yeah. But anywho.
Oh, yes. Let's do. Go back. Because.
What that long with no sleep.
Let's find out with the man who never slept, part two, or did, or what not.
Donovan returned to his room to await his visitor. 1 o'clock came, but Marion's Thigpen did not. 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock, and still he did not show. And then...
You disappoint me, Mr. Thigpen.
Huh?
Don't move. I've got a pistol pointed right at your heart. Turn up the lamp a little, would you? There. That's better. Now drop your gun. Look what you've done. You've assassinated my pillow. Did you really think I'd be lying there in bed waiting for you to kill me?
I had hoped you would be, yes.
Sit down, won't you? Tell me, have you ever heard the motto, we never sleep?
It has a familiar ring.
Does it now? It's the motto of the Pinkertons National Detective Agency.
You're a Pinkerton?
Quite correct. Patrick Donovan is the name. I'm currently working for the Fidelity Mutual Company. I investigate insurance frauds.
I'm beginning to understand. I suppose you've... already arrested Reggie Allworthy.
On the contrary. He convinced me to let him go.
He did? How?
With a little information. And $600. I found them both very convincing.
Then it's blackmail you have in mind. Well, you can just forget it. I don't have
no,
that kind...
No, not so fast. Now I'm not a blackmailer. Lucky for you, I'm not. Two wives. You almost make it too tempting to refuse. But no, blackmailing's... not my style.
Mr. Donovan, you try my patience.
Just what is it you want from me?
I'm very sorry that I'm trying your patience, laddie, but inasmuch as I've got this pistol leveled at your heart, I think you'll just have to put up with me for a bit longer.
Very well. But if you kindly come to the point...
The point is that 3 years ago, my wife, Ida, took out a life insurance policy on me in the sum of $10,000, making herself the beneficiary. Now here's where you come in. You're going to find a cadaver, just like you did for Mr. Allworthy, and you're going to fake my death, just like you did for Mr. Allworthy, and you're going to help me collect the $10,000, just like you did for Mr. Allworthy.
And in return, I'm to gain my freedom. Is that right?
There's a bright boy.
I'll need some time to come up with a plan.
Well, it's now 4 o'clock in the morning. I'll give you until 12 noon. Meet me in the restaurant downstairs. And don't get any funny ideas about leaving town. I'll have my eye on you.
Marion had gotten no sleep that night, and he certainly wasn't going to get any now. He returned to his hotel room and began to think.
Well, well, right on the button this time. You have a plan?
Yes, I believe so.
Good. I'm all ears, as the saying goes.
Marion's plan was quite simple, really. A cadaver would be obtained from a doctor friend of his for a small fee, and Marion generously offering to pay for it himself out of his own pocket. That problem solved, he only had to come up with a cause of death as something convincing enough in its circumstances, yet violent enough to obscure the cadaver's true identity.
Run over by a freight train?
It would certainly do the trick.
But why would I be run over by a freight train?
You're going to commit suicide.
Suicide,
I've checked your policy. There's a 2-year waiting period on suicide claims, and you said your wife took out the policy when? 3 years ago.
3 years, that's right.
So we wouldn't have any trouble on that score. Now, I know a stretch of track where the bushes hide the engineer's view. By the time he sees the body on the track, it will be too late.
Yes, I see.
Of course, a suicide note in your own hand will be found by the side of the tracks. And as to your wife, you said she is named as the beneficiary. Well, that's good. It will arouse less suspicion. We must inform her of the plan, however. We will need her to identify the body. Also, instruct her to turn the $10,000 over to me for delivery to you.
Why can't she bring it to me herself?
Oh, come now, Mr. Donovan. You're a detective. You should know better than that. What if she's followed?
Oh, you're right. I wasn't thinking.
That's all right. I'll do the thinking. Now, here's the map. Meet me the day after tomorrow at exactly 3 o'clock in the afternoon. And don't be late. Remember, we have a train to catch. You're late. The train is almost here. Did you bring the note?
Right here in my pocket. Where's the cadaver?
Behind these bushes. Give me a hand.
Where? I don't see it.
Here, behind this bush.
Where?
Right there, you fool.
Marion saw no reason in throwing good money after that. Why pay for a cadaver to impersonate Donovan when Donovan himself could so easily play the role? He took the note from Donovan's pocket and dragged the body to the railroad tracks, and not a moment too soon. Mrs. Ida Donovan soon arrived to identify the body. Marion put her up in the Regency Hotel, where he visited her daily until the insurance check arrived and was turned over to him. And thereafter, his visits were less frequent, and each time Ida would ask, "Where's my husband? When will I see him?" Oh, she was a figure to be pitied. Marion could keep the truth from her no longer.
Madam, I have distressing news. It appears that we're both the victims of a monstrous hoax. I thought that I was assisting a man in avoiding the merciless vengeance of his creditors. But I now discover that I have unwittingly aided your husband in a scheme to run off with another woman. You will never see him again, I'm afraid. He has taken a boat to Brazil, where I'm sure he will live in splendor on his insurance money. I am very sorry.
Poor Mrs. Donovan fell to the floor and began to sob uncontrollably. There was no consoling her. Her grief was too great. That evening, she took her life. As for Marion Thigpen, he quietly slipped away and was not heard of until nearly 1 year later. While shopping in Woolworths for a new pair of spats, he came face to face with Veronica, his first wife. Now, you are probably wondering how I have come by all this information and what part I play in this sordid tale. Well, the answer to the first part is simple. I have spent the last few days in the same prison cell with Mr. Thigpen as a man condemned to hanging. As the dead have nothing to fear from the living, so too do the living have nothing to fear from the dead. Therefore, Marion saw no reason why he should not unburden his soul to me on the eve of my execution. I don't think the morning will ever come.
It'll come soon enough.
Talk to me, would you? I'm certain to go crazy.
Talk? About what?
I don't care. Talk about yourself.
You want to hear about me?
Yes, I do.
All right. I guess it can't hurt. Not now, anyway. But I warn you, it will make your hair stand on end.
Go ahead. Tell me.
You see, I'm in here on a bigamy conviction. But if they found out the things I'm really guilty of, they'd have to hang me 10 times over.
And then he told me the story I've just told you. But what about me? What is my story? What is my crime? Why do I now stand on these gallows while that monster Thigpen watches from his cell window? Why is this hood being placed over my head and not his? Why is this rope being slipped around my neck and not his? And why am I to be hung in this lonely brick courtyard and not he?
Let me help you up. You all right, Mr. Pauly?
I'm fine. Didn't feel a thing. My compliments to your executioner. The rope broke perfectly.
You Pinkertons sure have some mighty strange methods.
Well, methods don't mean much, Warden, unless they also get results.
Well, whatever you say. Now, is there anything else we can do for you?
Yes, I'm anxious to get back to my hotel and take a hot bath. Might I borrow your coach?
Oh, of course. I'll have it brought around for you right away.
Thank you so much. Now do you understand? My name is Amos Pauly. I'm a Pinkerton agent. Like Patrick Donovan, you say? No, not quite. Donovan was an agent, but a bad agent. And an idiot into the bargain. He got no less than he deserved. But still, when a fellow agent is murdered, something must be done. It's a crime that cannot go unpunished. The agency cannot be embarrassed in this way. It took me only 1 week to link Donovan's so-called suicide to Marion Thigpen. And it took me one solid year to track down Thigpen himself. When I learned he was serving time for the ridiculous crime of bigamy, I had myself put into the same prison cell with him. An agent's job is half completed when he knows his suspect is guilty. And now I know that Marion Thigpen is guilty. And Marion Thigpen thinks that I am dead. In 3 months, he'll be released from prison and I will be there watching him. I will follow him wherever he goes and see whatever he does. And eventually he will slip and make a mistake and I will be there. Then I've got him. I will not fail in this endeavor. I cannot fail. I am a Pinkerton agent and I never sleep.
The Man Who Never Slept was written by Jeffrey David Bohm. I'll return in a moment with the names of tonight's players and a word about next week's crisis. The Man Who Never Slept featured Michael Morgan Dunn as Amos, Ross Perry as Marion Thigpen, Griff Cadnier as Reggie, and John Gilbert as Donovan. It was written by Jeffrey David Bohm, and directed and produced by Jim French at Audio Recording Incorporated in Seattle.
I'm just mad about Saffron. He said Donovan, didn't he? I don't know.
He did, yeah.
That was kind of getting really dark there, that tale, you know?
Yeah. Hang it all
one guy sounding a little bit like Dwight Frye. It's kind of creepy.
It did. It did sound like Renfield.
Yep.
A little bit like Renfield there.
Flies? Why should I eat flies?
Flies?
Well, I can get fat, juicy spiders.
Spiders. Spiders and flies.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think in the book he escalated to like birds and rats and things.
Yeah, he kept going up the food chain.
Yeah, literally.
Well, I don't know why he swallowed that fly. Perhaps he'll die.
He'll die.
Speaking of Renfield, I'm curious about this movie a little bit with Crazy Nick Cage as Dracula. And
yeah. He's...
Oh gosh.
Yeah.
His story's from Renfield's point of view, I guess, of being that guy. You know?
He's that guy.
And that guy that got taken over.
Yeah. This agent had the sort of dedication to duty that one does not see nowadays. I mean, yeah, sure, but I want time and a half plus extra vacation time. Plus
yep.
extra benefits, plus this, plus that.
Immunity
and
from everything. That's a little bit much.
Immunity from everything, et cetera, et cetera.
Mm. You know, like teachers get.
The only problem with demands like that, if you have too many of them, the executioner might not cut the rope.
There you go. Think about that. Mm. Creepy. Did we learn anything from this, Dave? Because I...
We could have. We could have.
Well,
possibly.
Let's find
possibly.
Out. Erie House Radio crosses its fingers for a godless moral of the story. God knows who wrote it.
Apologies to Gar. I kind of got a 2.1 here. One, it's okay to play dead as an adult, but you better stop if you find yourself on death row. And the second one is, if you are working for a company that never sleeps, better have lots of coffee. There you go. That's it.
That one needed a boost.
That one needed all the help it could get.
You got a little
all the help it could get, yes. They're little jokes. They hope to grow up to be real big ones one day.
Oh, yes. They grow up so fast.
Grow up to be a big joke, just like me. Okay. So more sleep stories coming up.
Yeah.
And I got a feeling we's going to have a little time left after the end tonight. Yes, indeed.
We could very well.
And you know what that means.
It can happen. It can happen.
Bonus material.
It can happen.
And we're depressed with no Gar, but he's with us in spirit, reaching out to us, giving us updates on his health. They're still probing him, not like aliens, but they're going to find out.
I think he wouldn't mind a probing like alien if they would find out what's wrong, but
no kidding.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah, just put me under a scanner. Put me under the scanner like they do in the produce section and find out what's wrong.
That's right. That's right. We should all have barcodes. Just scan us and they'll I know what's wrong with you. Take two of these and there you go.
Take two kumquats and call me in the morning, yes.
Morning, exactly.
We're like Star Trek where they pass the tricorder over you a couple times and next scene you're fine.
Exactly.
That's what we need.
What did they say? I'm going to crack my knuckles and jump for joy. I got a clean bill of health from Dr. McCoy.
Oh, look at that. I like that. Very poetic.
Thank you. Thank you. We must be literary, you know.
He's a doctor, not an escalator, you know. Yeah.
Yes.
So which Raymond do we have today?
Let me see. As far as the date
goes, let's see, it would be...
I love Raymond, and I love Raymond.
45. I think
naturally,
I believe it'd be Paul, this is Paul McGrath, the second Raymond.
Second
Sorry.
Raymond. That's okay. He's very good too. I love all the hosts of Inner Sanctum Mysteries, and this one is, believe it or not, not called The Lonely Duff, as many people have told me in the past. It's actually called The Lonely Duff.
Many people. Wait. Many people meaning me? I didn't know I was that big. But oh well.
No.
Oh dear.
Kind of an inside joke that just got out. Anyway.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, I needed a straight jacket. Yeah.
Oh.
Anyway. This one's starring Paul McGrath as Raymond. We got The Lonely Sleep from Inner Sanctum with an original broadcast date of
September 25th of 1940 and 5.
Lipton Tea and Lipton Soup present Inner Sanctum Mysteries. Good evening, friends of the Inner Sanctum. This is your host at the Squeaking Door again. Just slither in and let me dispel your weariness with a bit of eeriness, Oh, no. No, please. Don't sit in that chair. I'm saving it for rigor mortis to set in.
Oh, dear. I see this is going to be one of those nights when my favorite character gets killed.
Yes, Mary, but don't scream blue murder, because this is a corpse of a different color.
Well, if it's going to be that kind of a story, I'd better tell folks about something cheerful first. Yes, I mean Lipton tea. Lipton's is such a friendly, welcome drink. And that's because of its brisk flavor. Now, that word brisk is important. It means that Lipton tea always tastes fresh and full-bodied, tangy and vigorous. It's never flat or wishy-washy. That's the reason why Lipton seems to make good food taste better, and why Lipton tea is the perfect beverage to serve when you're entertaining friends. So even if you're not a regular tea drinker, you should try Lipton's. That brisk flavor makes all the difference in the world.
And now let's leave the world, temporarily, of course. Tonight's story is called The Lonely Sleep. It's an original radio play by Christopher Mayo, who scribbled it during a nightmare. And our star is Carl Swenson, who plays the role of Archie Gold. Murder is a specter which nudges all of us, anywhere. Most of us will never murder, but can any of us say we never will? Certainly Archie Gold, 30-ish, bald and mild-mannered, never thought he would murder. Archie was the window display man for Greg's department store. At night, the store is a fantastic nightmare of eerie shadows, covered showcases, cavernous depths, and dank, stale odors, with only his own hollow footsteps for sound, because windows are dressed at night. It's night now, and Archie's busy in his storeroom crating his favorite mannequin for shipment to the mannequin factory. Being a lonely man, he talks to the mannequin. And being in love with Esther Newman of the store's accounting office, he naturally calls his favorite mannequin Esther.
You've been very mean to me, Esther. The last time I asked you to go out with me, you snickered at me. That's not nice. That's why I had to do this to you.
Archie tucked Esther's smooth pink torso into a crate.
There. Perfect fit, darling. Perfect.
Then Archie wrapped Esther's slim legs and arms in excelsior, tucked them into another crate.
So, you wouldn't put your arms around me, darling. Well, you won't get another chance.
Then Archie picked up Esther's pretty head and placed it on his workbench.
Oh, Esther. I'm so lonely. Why don't people talk to me? Why can't I be popular? What's wrong with me? Why don't you go out with me?
What Archie never dreamed was that the real Esther Newman was at that moment slamming the last of her monthly report books closed, flicking off the light, and starting out of the finance office toward the rear door of the store. She's stopped by Archie's half-open door when she hears his voice.
No, listen to me, Esther, darling. I am making enough money here to buy us a little place over in Jersey. See, all my life, I wanted to love someone like you. You're so beautiful. You will marry me, won't you, darling?
Why, Archie, sitting there proposing to a dummy, and the dummy's name is Esther. What a coincidence.
Well, Esther, you worked late. I didn't know. Yes. I give the mannequins names. It's sort of a game. Yeah, it's game. That's it.
Well, they don't talk back anyhow.
No, they don't talk back. But they're sort of kind. They smile at me. See, I'm lonely. Mm-hmm. I work all night. Esther, will you go out with me Sunday night?
Mm-hmm.
Please. Just dinner and the movies.
Are you kidding? Why don't you ask your dummy friend? Hey, say, what a swell idea. She won't eat much. You can maybe get her into the movies for half price. And when you kiss her goodnight, Archie, she won't slap your face. Why are you looking at me that way?
You shouldn't laugh.
You're crazy. You're trying to scare me. Yes, that's it. No, you're not. You are crazy. Don't come near her. Archie!
You shouldn't laugh.
Archie, don't!
You shouldn't laugh. My turn to laugh. See? My turn. You shouldn't laugh. People shouldn't laugh when you're lonely.
You see, the specter of murder had nudged Archie, and he's obeyed. This was no mannequin at his feet. This was a woman, warm, beautiful, and dead. Then, being scared and lonelier than ever, Archie talked to his mannequins again. This time to Frank, painted and rouged and handsome in Greg's bargain 2950 tweed suit.
You heard her laughing at me, Frank. I just couldn't stand her laughing at me again. You look at her, Frank. You'd think she was asleep. Her neck's broken. See, what am I going to do with her? Yeah, I got to think. Got to hide her. Got to dress the front window, too. The window. Sale of cozy kitten mattresses starts tomorrow. It's a big sale. Sleep on a cozy kitten. I've got it, Frank. The window! I've put her in the window. On a cozy kitten mattress, and nobody will know. And then tomorrow night...
So Archie used some pancake makeup, bringing life to Esther's sallowing cheeks and purple lips. He placed her dead weight on a hard truck. He rolled it at the lighted window. An hour later, Esther's corpse, covered with gleaming white sheets and sleazy satin quilts, smiled in peaceful bliss at the empty street. Archie found his work well done.
Nothing more to do now. Just wait. I'll go home. And wait. That's a good window. You look very pretty in bed, Esther.
I've been watching you, young fella. Saw you do the whole thing.
Matter,
I scare you?
No, officer. I mean, I didn't know.
Yeah, been in the doorway across the street watching you. A lot of work to making up one of them windows, ain't there?
Yeah. You saw me do the whole window, you mean?
Uh-huh.
Oh.
Saw you put the mattresses in, make the bed, put the signs in, then fix the lights. Then you put the girl in the bed and fix her face up. Yeah, it's a nice job.
Yeah.
Say... You look bad, son.
Yeah?
Anything wrong? You sick?
Huh? No. I'm just tired.
All through for the night?
Yeah, I'll through. Good night, officer.
Good night, young fella, and don't worry about your girlfriend. I'll keep an eye on her every night.
So Archie went home, as you or I might have done. Because he'd been too busy setting his little post-mortem stage, the impact of his crime began to seep through only as he neared his rooming house. Maybe the girl in the doorway he passed started him thinking because she laughed.
Are you kidding?
Just a girl and her date. But you can't blame Archie for hurrying. You would have thought it was Esther, too. Archie hurried. He hurried to the rooming house. He raced up the steps. He had to get to his room, get in and close the door of the world. Close the door. That's it.
They can't laugh at me here. They won't find me here. This is my room. Nerves. Stupid running like that. I've got to act normal. Sure, just like nothing happened. I couldn't help it. She made me do it. No, forget about it.
Why, Archie Gold.
No. You can't laugh now. You're...
I'm dead, Archie. Yes, in a way. I'm in Greg's department store.
I don't believe in ghosts. It's just my mind, my imagination.
That's right, Archie. You're too clever to believe in ghosts. I'm not a ghost, Archie. I'm in your mind. I'm part of you now. Part of you.
Get out! Get out of me! Drive you out!
Oh, no, Archie. You can't. Unless, Archie, unless you replace me with someone else.
Yes. That might do it. Someone else. Another girl.
See? That's how a murderer thinks. Oh, yes. You do the same thing. Archie never thought he would murder. Now he's ready to do it again. Get rid of his conscience to get rid of a voice. Archie lit a cigarette. He poured himself some milk, ignoring the laughter in his brain until he pushed them again.
Look at your hands, Archie. Look at them. Oh, crooked and hard and clutchy.
Oh.
Like they were on my throat.
No, shut up!
Archie threw himself on the bed and jammed the pillow against his ears. Fell into a dream worse than reality.
Hello?
Archie Gold?
Yeah, this is Archie Gold.
This is Mr. Greg, Archie. I know this is your time to sleep, but it's important that you get down here right away.
Is anything wrong, Mr. Greg?
I can't tell you over the phone. Come down here. Goodbye.
All right, Mr. Greg.
After he'd shaved and dressed, Archie felt a little better. After all, if they'd discovered anything, Mr. Greg wouldn't have called. He'd have sent the police. Feeling of confidence stayed with him until he stood across the street from Greg. He lost it then. It dropped with a sickening pain about his heart and a dry pinching about his lips. People were standing three deep in front of his window display, and he caught sight of a policeman's cap following Mr. Gregg's bald head into the store. Well, were you thinking of going window shopping tomorrow? Want to be popular? Have lots of people crowding about you on the sidewalk side of a plate glass window. Want to be a mannequin? Look up Archie Gold. He's the mannequin doers.
Well, all I can say is I'm glad that murderer is about to be caught.
Why, Mary, don't talk that way. It was really kind of Archie to put her on the mattress. She was so sleepy. In fact, she was dead to the world. Yes, the one to feel sorry for is Archie. Why, the poor fellow's shivering. Why don't you make him a cup of Lipton tea?
Lipton's is too good for him. And besides, he's probably too scared to taste the difference between Lipton's and ordinary teas. Yes, folks, Lipton tea is different. In the language of tea experts, Lipton's has a brisk flavor. And when they use that word brisk, B-R-I-S-K, they mean that Lipton tea tastes tangy and spirited, really full-bodied. It's never flat or weak. So get acquainted with that brisk flavor. Why, you just don't know how good tea can be till you know how good Lipton's is.
Well, let's see how good Archie's alibi is. Remember Archie, the lonely little man who dresses Greg's department store windows at night? He just couldn't stand being spurned by Esther Newman any longer. She laughed at him when he asked for a date, and now Esther is a lifeless mannequin advertising the restful qualities of cozy kitten mattresses in the window display. And Archie enters the store to see what's in store for him.
Mr. Greg, I'm...
Archie Gold, come in. Close the door. Sit down. My boy, you know Miss Newman in our bookkeeping department?
Yes, sir. I knew her, but I'd like a chance
to... You're going to get a chance, my boy. Before leaving on a week's vacation, Miss Newman completed our annual report.
Miss Newman is on vacation?
Yes. Which isn't important. A report shows we sold 16 cozy kitten mattresses in 1 year.
Well, that's not many, is it, sir?
It's terrible. We were stuck with 1,500 of them. Just a minute now. Jenkins.
Yes, Mr. Gregg?
How many mattresses have you sold now?
802, sir.
You hear that, Gold?
Yes, sir.
802 mattresses in a couple of hours. And your window display did that. My boy, you're a genius.
Mr. Gregg, No.
I know just what you're going to say. Any man who has the imagination to put a woman dummy asleep in a window, and such a dummy, so peaceful. How much we pay you, Archie?
$36.47 a week, sir.
Starting today, it's $72.94. And a private office, and you're the head window display manager of my three stores. Ha! Stunned you, huh?
Everything I've always wanted.
What's more, I've had pictures taken of that window with the crowds, and the paper promised to run it in tonight's edition. With your name. Good?
Yes, sir. I want you to know, sir, I appreciate it.
Oh, all that. Nonsense. Greg knows a bargain. Now go home to bed again, or take tonight off.
Oh, no. I have work to do.
Ah, get more good ideas? Good.
Mr. Greg.
Yes, my boy.
If the mattresses are selling so well, we won't need the display. I can take it out to...
Oh, nonsense. Don't touch it. We'll run this sale for 2 weeks. I just ordered 1,500 more mattresses.
Wow. I always wanted a job testing mattresses in one manner or another.
Only 1,500 more ordered. Cool.
Oh my God.
That's a lot of naps.
Test them for durability.
Absolutely. Yes, I always wanted to go into a sleep study myself to just study how much that they would be amazed at how much I can sleep.
Yeah.
I would get fired for being lazy.
Man. The epitome of sleeping. I would be the epitome of sleeping on the job.
There you go. fine profession.
Oh, yes.
Yeah,
it's apparently, sadly becoming obsolete since you don't have too many stores that do the mannequin display anymore. They're still there, of course, but not as grandiose as they once were.
Yeah, they're featureless. They're basically featureless now. You know.
Yeah.
Many of them don't look realistic. They're just like a white slab. They slap things on and things like that. It's a dying art form, I guess.
Yep.
It would seem so. I mean, I was thinking when he was talking to the mannequins. Because at first I didn't know where this was going to go, but remember that Twilight Zone episode with
yep.
Anne Francis, the mannequins that come to life?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, she didn't want to go back. Your turn's up.
No kidding. I mean, that was definitely a mannequin that had to be very well crafted to resemble Miss Anne Francis.
Yes. And the other actors, too, that would come to life and later you would see them as mannequins. That was a very good episode.
Oh, that was a good episode, yeah.
Absolutely. But I did enjoy this. Poor, poor guy. Yes, yes, gentlemen, it's true. We can sometimes be a bit cruel and shut you down, laugh in your face, ridicule you, crush you under our heel.
I'm depressed now.
I feel beaten. And not in a good way. Oh. Sometimes I get mad at me. Well, let's wrap up.
Oh, well.
The Lonely Sleep from Inner Sanctum Mysteries. I like this Raymond, too. He's very good. Have yourself a couple of...
Success and popularity was sweet to Archie's taste. But Archie knew a corpse, no matter how beautiful, cannot survive the sun beating through glass for long. And Archie knew you. It was a wretched rainy night. Greg's department store had long since closed its doors. The night belonged again to Archie. Now he had a nasty job to do. He drew the curtains across the big window. Casey Officer was watching again. Esther was just a mannequin now, a mannequin of flesh and bones, but a mannequin. And Archie spoke to his mannequin.
You've had a hard day, Esther, darling, haven't you? Well, it's all over now. You never did anything for me alive. Dead, you brought me success. Now I've got to send you away. You're stiff and cold, Esther. And you can't laugh now, can you?
Esther couldn't laugh. And Archie opened the crates which contained the mannequin he had originally planned to ship. With a few simple tools and lots of work, he made Esther, the real Esther, conform to his original shipment. A torso. A pair of hands.
Who? That's the alley door. Somebody's there. She's a cop, maybe. I've got to act natural. After all, she's well hidden.
Could I come in? Please, I'm so wet and tired.
It's a girl. Yes, come in. Get out of that rain.
Thanks.
Why, you poor kid, you're soaked. Come into the workshop. I've got a heater in there.
Gosh, thanks.
She was sent to me. Someone to take Esther's place. Feel better now?
Yeah, that's better. You're very kind.
How did you happen to pick this door to knock at?
Well, the alley seemed a good place to get out of the wind. It started to rain, and I saw your light.
Oh, I see. And you're broke.
Yeah. The usual story. I came to town from Philly to get a job. Job was there, all right, but the boss wasn't on the level.
Well, don't you have a home? A parent or a husband, I mean?
No.
A shame. Look, stay right there now. I'll be right back.
You're not leaving me, are you?
No, I'm going to get a blanket to put across your shoulders. I'll be right back.
Of course he'd be right back. Wasn't this just what he needed? Another mannequin to satisfy Esther's voice? It made sense. The second time, it's easier. It always is.
Don't move, May. Huh? I'll put it across your shoulders.
All right. You're a very lonely man, aren't you, Mr. Gold?
How do you know that?
Because I like you.
How does that prove I'm lonely?
I like lonely people.
Why?
Because I'm terribly lonely myself.
I got some coffee in the thermos here. I'll get you some.
I like it here. I like to look at the mannequins, especially that handsome one there. What do you call him?
What do you mean, call him?
Well, you must talk to them. I would.
You're wonderful. You understand. Yeah, I do. I do talk to him. His name's Frank. Frank, meet May. May, this is Frank.
Hello, Frank. I'm sleepy, Frank.
Oh, May. Why did you come tonight? Why couldn't you have come two nights ago? You're sleepy?
Mm-hmm. I'm warm and sleepy.
Look, I have 3 hours before my window has to be finished, and I have an errand that'll take me about an hour. You climb into the bed in the window and...
People will see me in the window.
No, the curtains are drawn. I'll wake you when I get back.
All right. Looks like the kind of bed I could sleep on forever. Ever.
Doesn't always work out the way you plan it, see? Archie didn't want to murder Esther, but he did. Archie wants to murder May, but he'd rather not. Well, Archie drew the satin quilts over May. She smiled, closed her eyes with a murmured thanks, and was asleep. Archie knew now he loved her, that he must never listen to her speak again. While Archie carried the crates containing Esther's remains into the station wagon in the alley, a little man with a sad, droopy face and a derby hat argued with the night captain of the local police station.
I tell you, I know what I'm talking about. I stopped at Greg's window 4 times today. I know a corpse when I see one.
Well, I saw that window, too. That's a dummy in that bed. I know a dummy when I see one.
I don't doubt that, Captain. You've had more experience with dummies than I have, but I've had more experience with corpses than you have. That's a dead girl in the bed.
Now, what makes you so sure?
I've been an undertaker for 40 years. My name is Huzak. My establishment is down the block from Gregg's store on 10th Street.
Okay, we'll check. Operator, get me Mr. Gregg. Yeah, Gregg's department store. Of course it is home. What else at this hour?
Archie had a plan. Excitement gripped him. But that habit of years was strong, and he talked to Esther as he piled her 3 coffins into the station wagon in the alley.
Don't you worry, Esther. In a half hour, you'll be at the bottom of the river. You shouldn't have laughed, Esther. Then I'll come back to May.
Sure. Archie had a plan, all right. But it didn't include the little old undertaker who knew a corpse when he saw one, or an angry, sleepy Mr. Gregg, or a confused... We're right then coming to a stop in front of the store.
This is an outrage, a preposterous, fantastic farce. Getting me down here in the middle of the night to prove I have a corpse in my window.
I know, Mr. Gregg. I feel silly about it myself, but Mr. Huzak here seems so sure.
The curtains are drawn in front of the window. We'll have to go inside.
In a minute, you're all going to look very silly. There. Does that look like a corpse?
No. You're right. It's not a corpse. It isn't a dummy either.
She's alive. Breathing.
Something queer here. I'm going to look around outside.
Archie! Archie, go! Archie! Archie!
Archie didn't hear himself being paged. But at the entrance of the alley, he saw the police car in front, and he heard the police captain shouting from the sidewalk. That was when Archie decided it was better to be lonely. The lonelier, the better.
They found out. That's the police. They found out.
Hey, you!
Wait now. Got to. They won't catch me. They won't. Got the light, Fred. I gotta go through. Faster. faster. Why can't it go faster? The truck! Turn right! Turn!
No one ever heard Archie's last words. They bubbled through his torn throat as he lay in the glass-smashed window through which he crashed. No one.
I'm so lonely. May. So lonely.
Well, Greg, here's your Archie Gold. Bet those crates will be interesting.
Awful. Awful.
Yeah, quite a mess.
No one was cruel enough to point out a gruesome bit of grisly humor. The lonely little man who'd spent so much time in display windows had created his final masterpiece. Archie had decorated his last window in Husak's funeral parlor. The lesson we learned from tonight's story is that murder doesn't pay. It's a losing business. Murderers are always in the red. And it's strenuous work, too. You're bound to find yourself a little stiff.
Mr. Host, I did not like that story.
Well, neither did I, Mary. Imagine the cozy kitten mattress company pulling a smart advertising stunt like that on Lipton's time and for free.
Now, that's not what I mean at all. And if you're worried about Lipton's, let me assure you that Lipton's is the largest selling brand of tea in the whole world. That's the kind of popularity that really counts. And folks,
yeah,
if you'll just once try Lipton tea, I think you'll be convinced, too.
You tell them, Mary.
Well, I have to run along now, folks. Got some shopping to do in Greg's department store. What? Oh, I know it's late, but, you see, Archie and I shop at night to avoid the shrouds, you know. By the way, this month's Inner Sanctum mystery novel is Puzzle for Wantons by Patrick Quentin. Oh, and here's a special announcement. Next week's Inner Sanctum story, directed by Hyman Brown and brought to you by Lipton Tea and Lipton Soup. Next week's story is about a man whose dreams always come true. All he has to do is to dream that somebody's being murdered and... Enough to keep you awake, isn't it? Oh, until we meet again next Tuesday, you dream of me and I'll dream of you. Now it's time to close the squeaking door, so... Good night. Pleasant dreams.
Here's a
great... He sounds lonely.
Oh, my. So
that
lonely.
That be a little bit long for fair use. But anyway.
My goodness, if only he had just had a nice cup of Lipton tea, he wouldn't have been so lonely.
There you go.
You know, I've got a new invention I've been working on, a tea bag. That, you know, because the problem with tea bags right now, you can use it once and you have to throw it away. Mine you can use over and over and over again because it's waterproof. The first waterproof tea bag. What do you think?
That's amazing. Order yours now.
Incredible.
Of Eerie House Radio. And Weirdness Really Bad Movie. And Spaceship One. And... Sorry.
And patent pending.
There you go. I remember good old Pat. Patent pending.
Oh, yeah, Pat with... pending. There you are.
Yep. Right up there with Pat Paulson. Hey. I would vote
sounds
for
like
him.
Sounds like very presidential, Pat Paulson. Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
I would vote for him
close
if he were running now.
Close personal friend of T. Ray Mark. Trademark.
Yes. T. Reid Mark.
Wow. That's one way to cut out the middleman. I mean, if you're going to go, just
go right in straight into the funeral parlor and you're set.
Yeah.
Might as well. Yeah.
Self-serve. That's coming next. Self-serve funerals.
Self-serve funerals. Well, yeah.
Yeah.
What if they have a beep? What if they have a beep scanner for that too? Tells you what you have for lunch or something. I don't know.
Beep. Yeah. Just scan. You know. Just go to a vending machine and say, "Huh? Do I want the super deluxe or just the old fashioned old West pine casket, or just bury me with my boots on?"
My feeling is funerals are way too expensive. How much can a can of gas and a pack of matches cost? What? Depending where you are in the country, max $7-$8. Say $10 here. There you go. There's a cheap funeral.
I found another way to save some money, Dale. I have, over the years, eaten so many different chemicals that I won't need embalmed. Before I go, I'm going to stuff myself with Twinkies.
Ooh, there you go. You'll last forever.
Forever.
There you are, folks. Get twinkified.
Get twinked.
Get twinked, yeah. Okay.
There you go.
Okay.
Did they even make them? Didn't they sell a company and rebrand or something like that? Twinkies?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah,
they...
Go ahead, CW.
I'm sorry, go ahead, Dave. Oh, well, I was going to say, at first...
I'm back.
Go ahead. At first, it was everyone was notified Twinkies were going to go bye-bye. They're going extinct. People freaked out and stockpiled Twinkies. And then they were told, "We're back. We got sold, and Twinkies are back. Yay."
We were joking.
Yeah, kind of what happened is Hostess closed down, and somebody else bought them that was non-union. And since then, even Twinkies have not quite tasted the same because it's non-union Twinkies.
Oh. So a non-union bottom. Oh, that's a shame. Tisk, 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 tisk. So just remember, everybody, when you eat that Twinkie, strike Twinkies. I mean, Starbucks is unionizing. Time for Twinkies and ding-dongs and ho-hos to go. Union!
Look for the union label.
Label.
Twinkies and ding-dongs and... Twinkies and ding-dongs. Sounds like the gals I used to date. Twinkies and ding-dongs, yeah.
And not nearly as nutritious. All right, on to our next... next program. We saved one of the best for last, suspense. With a title aptly named "The Dead Sleep Lightly."
I would think they'd sleep pretty sound, but anyway.
Oh yeah.
This is one of the earliest. This is from the first full year, Dale. This is episode number 35, and it comes to us from March the 30th of 1943.
Ooh, wartime.
Ooh. Suspense.
What, my goat?
Who's there?
This is the Man in Black, here again to introduce Columbia's program, Suspense. Our stars this evening are three. The order of their appearance, they are Walter Hampton, one of the theater's proudest names for two generations, and Susan Hayward and Lee Bowman, two of Hollywood's brightest younger stars. The story called The Dead Sleep Lightly by John Dixon Carr is tonight's tale of suspense. If you've been with us on these Tuesday nights, you will know that suspense is compounded of mystery and suspicion and dangerous adventure. In this series are tales calculated to intrigue you, to stir your nerves, to offer you a precarious situation and then withhold the solution until the last possible moment. And so, with The Dead Sleep Lightly, and with the performances of Walter Hamden, Susan Hayward, and Lee Bowman, we again hope to keep you in suspense.
Ashes to ashes, and dust to dust.
Meadowvale Cemetery, not far from New York. Meadowvale Cemetery, on a dim gray morning in early April, when rain forms a mist across leafless trees and white gravestones. You see, over there, the group of silk-hatted gentlemen, each with his protecting umbrella, gathered around an open grave. You see the clay soil freshly dug. You can hear, perhaps, the creaking of support as the coffin is lowered into its everlasting house. And the droning voice of the surgeon.
I am the resurrection and the life, saith the Lord. He that believeth on me, though he were dead, yet shall he live.
Live?
Quiet, Mr. Templeton, please.
What's wrong with old Templeton?
Please, sir, remember where you are.
She's not alive, I tell you. She's not alive.
It might seem a long distance, that, from the Cosmopolites Club in Gramercy Park on the following evening, when that same well-fed man, as hard and unemotional as the diamond pin in his tie, hurries up the steps into the club then.
Yes, Mr. Templeton?
Tell me, Mr. Wilmot in the club, do you know?
Yes, sir. Don't you see him?
See him where?
In the lounge over there, sir, sitting by the fire.
Yes, of course. I'm a little upset. You're a good fellow, Henry. I won't forget you.
Thank you, sir. Excuse me, sir, but aren't you going to take off your hat and overcoat?
Never mind my hat and coat. Just tell me one other thing. When I came into the club, was there anybody following me?
Following you, Mr. Templeton?
Yes, a woman. A woman with a long skirt and a heavy black veil.
There aren't many women who wear that kind of dress nowadays, sir.
Look out into the street. Do you see anybody?
No, sir. There's just a...
What's that?
Oh, that's only the old street musician, sir. He doesn't mean any harm.
I won't have that tune played, you hear? I'm used to getting my orders obeyed, and I'm going to have this one obeyed. Here's some money. Go out and tell him to go away.
Yes, sir, if you insist, but...
You're told and don't ask questions. If anybody wants me, I shall be with Mr. Wilmot.
Very good, sir.
Good evening, Wilmot. Mind if I sit down for a minute?
Why, not at all. Pull up a chair. Want some coffee?
No, thanks. I'll get down to brass tacks right away.
Yes, you always do. I've noticed that.
Well, I'm a pretty self-sufficient kind of a fellow, Wilmot. I made a name for myself, even if I do say it myself. But, well, the fact is, I need advice.
A successful publisher asking advice from one of his own authors. That's something new, isn't it?
Now, look here, Wilmot, I'm serious.
All right, I take it back. What's on your mind?
Well, you've studied what we'll call the supernatural, haven't you?
I've lectured and written books about it, yes.
And did you ever meet a ghost?
No, I can't say I ever did. Have you?
It might only be my own imagination. Yes, that's what scares me. You get on in years, and your arteries harden, and you don't take enough exercise, and you think something ought to be done about your waistline, but you never bother. You see, Wilmot, I went to a funeral yesterday.
You did? Whose funeral was it?
The person who died has nothing to do with this. It was old Simpson of Harley and Sons. We thought it was only decent to make up a party and go to the funeral. And I took my secretary along, a girl named Molly Carroll. I'm leaving for Washington tomorrow. Besides, I'm moving house. So there was a lot of work to do. What I couldn't stand was that infernal cemetery in the rain. We must have gone in by the wrong gate, because we were in a neglected, desolate part of the cemetery where the rank grass grew over the graves. You'll oblige me, Miss Carroll, if you first find out the proper directions about places. You come in the wrong gate to the cemetery.
Well, I'm sorry, Mr. Templeton. I thought
But you thought doesn't matter now. This is the wrong part of the cemetery. My shoes are absolutely ruined with wet clay.
Well, it isn't doing my own shoes and stockings any good either, Mr. Templeton.
If there's been any damage to them, Miss Carroll, I'll replace them. You never found me ungenerous now, have you?
Well, not exactly ungenerous, no.
I'll pay you the compliment, Miss Carroll, saying that you're the best secretary I ever had.
Thank you.
Yet you want to leave me.
Yes, I want to get married.
That's what Mr. Barnes is telling me. And who is this paragon of yours? What does he do? Does he make any money?
Well, Frank's a radio technician. He's not very wealthy, I'll admit.
Wealthy? A radio technician? I bet he doesn't make as much as I pay you. Yet you want to get married.
Well, is there anything very strange about that?
Yes, if it interferes with your career, if it... Good Lord. Look at that.
Look at what, Mr. Templeton?
Over there, where I'm pointing.
You mean that? It's only an old gravestone covered with weeds and brambles.
I haven't seen that grave in years.
It looks rather neglected.
It is neglected, isn't it? Will you go closer, please, and read the inscription?
Mr. Templeton...
Do as I tell you, please.
It says, let's see if I can get some of these weeds aside. It says, sacred to the memory of Mary Ellen Cleaver, born September 5th, 1892, departed this life March 25th, 1919. Thou shouldst still be adored as this moment thou art, let thy loveliness fade as it will. If you lower that umbrella, Mr. Templeton, you'll get soaking wet.
Sentimental trash. But she always liked it.
She always liked it?
Mary Ellen Cleaver.
Did you know her?
Very well indeed. She was my wife.
Your wife? But I never knew you were married.
Neither does anybody else. Where's my flask of brandy? What have I done with it?
It's in your hip pocket, Mr. Templeton, but do you think that's very wise? You've already had more than enough.
Whatever I do is wise, Miss Carroll. Well, we were married very young. She was a nice little thing. I was fond of her, yes. But she couldn't have helped me. I'm not a snob, but she wasn't in my class. No style, you know, no manners, no education.
Indeed.
Could I have introduced her to the friends I was making? No. Wouldn't have been kind to her. She didn't even want to go to the places where I was invited. She'd sit at home and say, what was it like? Did you have a nice time? What was Mrs. So-and-so wearing? And... she loved me. I'll put that to her credit. But...
you left her?
I thought it was the kindest thing to do, yes. She went away. Then I heard she'd had...
had what?
Nothing. Doesn't matter. Well, there was a war on. I attended the peace conference in Europe. Never even knew she was dead until I heard some friends had buried her. I always promised to call her up. She said she'd come back to me if I did.
You couldn't call her up now, Mr. Templeton, even if you wanted to.
No, I suppose not. But I was fond of her. I wish there was something I could do.
Well, you could have her grave cared for. Have some flowers put on it.
That's it. That's an idea. She'd have liked that. Can you take care of that for me?
I'll look after it tomorrow morning, Mr. Templeton.
But how will they ever be able to locate the grave? There must be thousands in this cemetery.
Oh, each grave has a number, you know, cut into the stone so you can identify it. This is number 1212.
1212. Sounds like a telephone number, doesn't it?
Yes, doesn't it?
Meadowvale 1212. Poor girl. I was fond of her.
Please, Mr. Templeton, come along and please, no more brandy. You've got a funeral to attend.
Wilmot, the night came, and the horror.
What horror? Take it easy, man. There's nothing to worry about. You were sitting here in the Cosmopolites Club.
Yes, but I wasn't sitting in the club last night. I was on my way home.
And why should that scare you?
I don't know, but it did. I'd been jumpy all day. That infernal number kept running through my head. Meadowvale, 1212. Have you ever seen my house?
Yes, it's that big sham Gothic place on Riverside Drive, isn't it?
Yes, big and dark and drafty like a mausoleum. I told you it was moving house to an apartment downtown. But there were some papers there. I had to get out of the safe in the library to take with me to Washington tomorrow. I knew the servants would be gone, of course. But I hope Mrs. Bloom, that's my housekeeper, would still be there. Then, when I went up the park, about 6:30...
Meadowvale, 1-2-1-2.
Templeton, this is a surprise.
Sorry to trouble you, Mr. Bloom. I seem to have mislaid my key. The other could have sworn I had another key ring this morning.
It's no trouble, Mr. Templeton. Only, I hope you're not planning to spend the night here.
No, I'm going to a hotel. Why do you ask?
Because they've disconnected everything except the electricity and taken away most of the furniture.
I haven't touched anything in the library.
No, sir. I told them you said to leave that. But it does seem a pity in a way.
What seems a pity?
To break up a lovely home like this after all these years.
Home? This big, ugly picture gallery?
It's been a home to me, sir.
Well, I've treated you generously, haven't I?
Yes, sir. I'm sorry.
I've got several hours' work to do, Mrs. Bloom. A whole safe full of papers to sort over. I'm going to the library and... What's that you're hiding behind your back?
I'm not hiding anything, sir.
All the same, what is it?
It's only a music box, sir. I found it in the attic when the moving men were here. If I hadn't known there were, well, no ladies in your life, I'd have said it belonged to one of them. I love to hear them, sir. May I?
Mrs. Bloom.
Yes, sir.
If you don't want me to smash that music box, turn it off.
Yes, sir, I'm sure I'd never.
I'm going to the library. If you can find any sandwiches and coffee, bring them.
Yes, sir.
Excuse me. Same old library. Same old claw-footed desk. There's the Venetian mirror she bought for you. Look at yourself in the mirror, Templeton. Admit you can't face it. Admit you can't work here tonight. Admit you've got to have lights and music and... That's it. Go out for dinner. Telephone Wilmot. If they've let the phone, here it is. Hello, hello.
Yes, sir. Number, please.
Please. I want Meadowvale 1212.
Meadowvale 1212.
Wait, what the devil's name am I saying? Change that, I want...
Hello, my darling. I knew you'd call me when you needed me.
Who's that speaking? Who are you?
It's Mary Ellen, dear. Don't you recognize my voice?
You're not Mary Ellen. This is a trick. Mary Ellen is dead.
Yes, dear. But the dead sleep lightly. And they can be lonely, too. And now that you do need me...
I don't need you. I don't need anybody.
I'm coming back to join you, dear. It's not easy, but I'll be there by the time the clock. I'll wear a veil because I don't look very pretty.
I won't have this. I won't listen to you. I won't...
Goodbye, my dear. Remember, when the clock strikes 7...
Mrs. Bloom!
Mr. Templeton, what on earth is the matter?
Who's been playing tricks on me?
Tricks, sir, I don't understand.
Who spoke to me on this phone?
But, sir, nobody could have spoken to you on that phone.
Nobody could have? What are you talking about?
That phone's disconnected, sir.
Disconnected?
Yes, sir. The man came here this afternoon and took that little metal box off the wall and rolled all the wires up and put everything on the desk there. Said he'd be back tomorrow to take it away.
Mrs. Bloom, that's impossible.
Look for yourself, sir. You're standing in the middle of the room holding that phone, and the wires don't lead anywhere.
That's true.
So you couldn't very well have talked to anybody on the phone that wasn't connected? Now, could you?
I tell you, I got the operator. I heard it ring. I talked to someone else.
Oh? And what did that person say?
She said she'd be here to visit me when...
What's the matter?
Oh, I'll tell you what the matter. He's got to change himself. That's what he's got to do.
Sounds like the phone ain't the only thing disconnected.
No.
Wow.
Good suspenseful, frightful tales tonight, Dave. Well done.
Yeah, and
absolutely.
This one is done. Austin Carr, Jonathan Austin Carr, he was very involved in the early part of suspense. He contributed several stories, and this is one of his even his better ones that I've heard him present here on Suspense.
Yeah, I have a traveling disc with lots of suspense on it, and a lot of my are written by Austin Carr.
Yeah.
Ooh. Nice. Road trip for
road trip.
Yep. Where are we going? I don't care as long as it takes about 45 episodes, you know?
There you go.
There you are. Let's see, what would that be? From Ohio to Alaska?
Maybe.
Yeah, quite possibly.
But that's my idea of cruising in style, man. You got your...
Cute.
Your suspense, your inner sanctum, take it and roll, baby.
Oh, wow. Can you imagine listening to one of those shows if you're out in the middle of the painted desert, no city lights, just you, the road, UFO
the
is hovering right above you.
Yep.
Scorpions, snakes.
Scorpions, yep.
Snakes, yep. Why does it have to be snakes?
Next, what have you seen? Yes. And that great big flying saucer, and you realize you're the only person on the road. Oh.
Yikes. Yikes.
Yikes.
How come my watch is running backwards? What's going on here?
Oh, you hear the theme from the X-File running in your head. Help.
For those of you with Roku, I believe Freevee, which is the channel owned by Amazon, has the entire X-Files series on there where you can go watch it for free.
No way!
They rotate stuff out once in a while. You got to, if you don't have one, you got to get yourself a Roku.
But that even has the last two seasons that were, you know, like, 8 episodes and 10 episodes. It has those two seasons on there as well. So,
whoa! So get your dose of cigarette smoking man. We don't mean Dale. We mean the other guy. And
I changed brands.
Yeah. Yes.
To save 40 cents on a carton. figure. Unbelievable.
That would be the generic cigarettes, right, Dale?
Yeah.
Do they sell generic brand stuff anymore?
They're hand-rolled by Oompa Loompas. What?
There you go.
Oompa Loompas. Oh, that's why they're orange. It's all those tobacco. It's that tobacco leaf juice. Ew.
Oh, that sounds nasty. I like it.
Oh, jeez. Well... You know, if you really want to save even more money, you can roll your own. That seems to be the trend nowadays.
I did for a while. Actually, they had, for a while in Ohio, you would buy a bag of tobacco, and they had a machine, and you would dump them. It was weird. It was like a kid's thing. You would buy your tobacco, dump a bunch of it into this bin, and then you would buy a pack of already rolled cigarette tubes with the filter on them and everything, and it would pack them for you.
Yep.
And they were like half the cost of a carton of like brand name cigarettes.
Yeah, my son did that for a while, yeah.
Yep, but then the state said, nah, you're manufacturing cigarettes. Nah, we're not doing that. we're not getting enough tax money. You're not doing that.
Well, for all you do-it-yourselfers, those machines probably are on eBay, so you could probably still get free leaf tobacco, still find the filters, the paper, and...
I don't know. The same thing, like, I was very successful in cutting down on tobacco using the electronic cigarette. And now they want to get rid of them. But you can vape, but don't let it look like a cigarette, God forbid. What the hell?
Well, no, I mean, what they want to
want to do is they don't want these things with all these kid flavors of bubble gum and blueberry cheesecake and chocolate chip and all that nonsense.
They do have a ton of that stuff still.
I know.
Yeah.
That's why we're afraid kids were getting interested in it, because it had that flavor and it still had the nicotine injection. By the way, if anyone from ATF is listening, I was just kidding about all that, you know, make your own stuff. Just joking, folks.
You know, we have a lot of fun on this show.
Oh, yes, we do.
Take nothing we say serious. Take nothing we say serious. Unless it's about old time radio.
That's it.
Of which we still have a second half to go.
We do. Of the Dead Sleep Lightly from Suspense. We'll be back.
And so, Wilmot, that's what happened last night. Phone was disconnected. It was Mary Ellen's voice. There's no doubt about that. Am I out of my mind or what?
Before I say anything about that, my friend.
Well?
Hear the end of your story. What did happen when the clock struck 7?
I don't know.
You don't know?
No, I lost my head. Ran out of that house as though the devil were after me. Maybe he was.
And since then?
I spent the night at the hotel. Today, I've walked past that house 50 times, 100 times. Trying to muster up enough nerve to go in. I couldn't do it, but I've got to go in there.
Why?
It's those papers I've got to take to Washington.
Send somebody else to get them.
I can't do that, Wilmot. It's confidential information for the government. I've thought of everything. I've even bought a revolver, see?
For the love of heaven, man, put that gun away. You want the other club members to think you have gone insane?
Then I thought of you. You know all the tricks of fake spiritualists. You've written about it and lectured about it.
Which reminds me, by the way, that I'm lecturing before the Acropolis Club in about 20 minutes.
You've got to break that engagement, Wilmot.
Why?
Because you're going with me to my house tonight, now.
Oh, that's impossible, old man. Now sit quietly and listen to me. I'll go with you willingly tomorrow morning.
That's too late. I'm taking an early plane to Washington.
Well, then wait until I can get away from the lecture. Say, around midnight. I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll take a taxi and join you as soon as I can.
That won't do. I've got to know the answer now. Do you understand?
Aren't you being a little unreasonable about this?
Unreasonable or not, I usually get my own way, and I mean to have it now.
Well, then I'm afraid you'll have to go to the house alone. Besides,
you know, Wilmot, you worry me. You sit there puffing at that pipe and looking at me out of those queer eyes of yours like a young Satan. I've often wondered what you were really thinking about.
Since you flatter my intelligence so much, I was wondering whether you'd been quite frank with me.
Frank with you how?
About your late wife, Mary Ellen Kleber.
What about her?
Well, after she left you, something happened that, you don't like to talk about. Was there, by any chance, a child, a son, for instance?
Did you say a son?
Yes.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Well, then let's agree not to understand each other, shall we?
Now, are you coming with me or aren't you?
I tell you, man, I'll get there as soon as I can.
All I can think about is the wet red clay in that cemetery, and the dismal grave in the rain, and what her face might look like if she raised the veil, and what am I going to see in that house? What am I going to see in that house?
So the clock chime, the hours dwindle, and the traffic roar of the city sinks to a low growl behind twinkling lights. It is midnight, when a taxi moves along a certain street towards a certain house out of a bygone age. Lightless, black against the stars, surrounded by iron railings and with a path bordered by fir trees leading to the front door. Look, too, at the face of Mr. Patrick Wilmot when that taxi draws near.
All right, driver. This is the place.
I'll be in waiting for you, sir.
No, you needn't wait. Keep the change.
Thank you, sir. Good night.
So the front gate is open. And he did go in. And I beg your pardon. I didn't mean to bump into you.
Mr. Wilmot.
You know who I am.
Oh, yes. I've seen you several times at our office. I'm Molly Carroll, Mr. Templeton's secretary.
What are you doing here?
Well, it's Mr. Templeton.
What about him?
Well, that's what I want to know. I was out with Frank, that's my fiancé, and when I got home, the girl I room with said that Mr. Templeton had been phoning and phoning all evening. She said he sounded drunk or something. He wanted somebody to go with him to this house.
Evidently, I wasn't the only person he applied to. Shall we go in?
Yes, but the whole house is dark. Suppose he isn't there.
He's there, all right. You don't know men like Bert Templeton.
But I...
I'll push the gate wider. Now, straight up the walk to the front door. I've got a flashlight.
What are we going to find?
Something rather unpleasant. I'd better warn you.
How do you know?
I have my ways of knowing, Miss Carroll.
Oh, look.
What is it?
That French window to the left of the front door.
Yes.
It's partly open.
Well, there's nothing in that, necessarily. Templeton said he'd lost his key. He might have had to open a window.
Oh, that's true, but...
So you see it, too, do you?
See what?
There's a footprint across the sill of that French window. A footprint made in wet clay.
It's like the clay of the cemetery. Yeah,
so I should imagine. Will you go in first, or shall I?
Into that dark room? I will not.
Well, then stay here, please, until I get some lights on.
No, wait. I'll go. Let me take your arm.
All right, be careful now. Yes, I thought so. This room is the library. And there are more footprints of somebody or something walking in. They lead... Who's there? Who's there?
It's only me, sir. Mrs. Bloom, the housekeeper.
Then what's the idea of standing in a dark room in the middle of the night with what sounds like...
It's only a music box, sir. I left it behind along with some other things and came back to get them. I've got my own key. I thought I heard a noise in here.
But why aren't there any lights?
The electricity's cut off, sir. It was cut off today.
I see. Templeton is here, or was here. He must have had some kind of light. If I turn this flashlight on the desk, maybe... Be quiet, Miss Carroll!
What is it, sir? I'm as blind as a bat without my glasses.
It's Mr. Templeton. He's lying on the floor beside the desk.
Oh, he isn't...
No, he isn't dead. His face is the color of putty. I think he's had some kind of stroke. We'd better not take any chances. Mrs. Bloom?
Yes, sir.
Get outside to the nearest telephone and call for an ambulance. Tell him it's an emergency case.
You're Mr. Wilmot, aren't you? But what happened to him?
Ask a dead woman.
I beg your pardon.
Never mind. Hurry.
Of course I'll hurry, Mr. Wilmot. What are we going to do?
Now, let's have a look around. Templeton seems to have been working at his papers by the light of a couple of candles, which somebody's blown out. We'll relight them. There's the desk. There's all the papers scattered round
him. Mr. Wilmot, please. What happened to him?
I'll tell you. As he sat there in the dim light of two candles, a ghostly figure appeared at that French window. It wore a long, old-fashioned skirt and a heavy black veil to hide the face. It walked toward Templeton, tracking graveyard clay. It stretched its arms to him like this.
Keep away from me, please.
Templeton couldn't stand it. He collapsed. And now, before the old housekeeper returns, would you care to hear how the whole trick was worked?
Trick? What trick?
Have you heard about the ghost voice that talked on a disconnected telephone?
Oh, yes. Yes, he said something about it this morning, but I thought he wasn't himself.
He wasn't, but he heard it. Remember Mrs. Bloom's story about the telephone man?
Yes.
They don't send a man round to yank the whole apparatus off the wall, put it on the desk, and say he'll be back for it next day. This man from the telephone company was an imposter.
The man from the telephone company was an imposter?
Exactly.
Oh, look, he's moving his hand. He's trying to open his eyes. Isn't there anything we can do for him?
No, there's nothing we can do till the doctor arrives. In the meantime, listen to me.
All right. What did this imposter do?
He took away the real phone and substituted a spirit telephone. You don't know what a spirit telephone is?
No, of course not.
It's an old device used by fake mediums. You see a telephone without wires standing on a desk like that one. You pick up the receiver and talk to the dead. Of course, you never really talk into the phone at all.
But if you don't talk into the phone, then...
Fixed underneath the desk is a tiny microphone with hidden wires leading to another room in the same house. That microphone picks up every word you think you're saying to the phone. Is that clear?
I think so.
Now, the dummy telephone is really a low-power radio receiving set. Somebody in another room can talk back to you after hearing what you say on the wired microphone.
Then, Mr. Templeton...
If Templeton hadn't rung Meadowvale 1212, then rest assured that same number would have rung him.
Well, then the scheme couldn't fail either way.
But, you see, there's one thing in this matter I haven't got quite clear even yet.
And what's that?
Tell me, Miss Carroll, just why did you work this whole trick? Why did you try to scare your father to death?
My father?
Templeton is your father, isn't he?
That might be rather difficult to prove, Mr. Wilmot.
By George, I admire you.
Thanks very much. I'm flattered.
Expressionless as ever. Eyes as hard and cold and blue and handsome as... Well, make your own comparisons. But I knew you were guilty, of course, when I heard your fiancé was a radio technician.
You can leave Frank out of this.
Oh, you have scruples. Have I touched you?
Nothing can touch me. Not since my mother died.
Your fiancé installed the ghost mechanism and took it away today. He probably thought it was only a joke.
He did. I swear he did.
And the rest of it was plain enough. Who led Templeton to the wrong gate in the cemetery, past that woman's grave? You did. Who was the only one who could have stolen the key to this house off that key ring he took to the office? You were. You needed that key to come and go as you liked and impersonate the two voices on the phone.
Is there any need to go on with this? He killed her, you know.
You mean Templeton killed your mother?
Oh, not with a knife or a bullet or poison. All he did was break her heart. And that's no offense in law.
Steady now.
Well, I've done what I wanted to do. I've torn his whole rotten life to pieces. And there he is, gasping for breath on the floor. And I'm glad. Oh, God, forgive me. He is my father.
Does he know you're his daughter?
No. No, of course not. When I went to work for him as a secretary, he hadn't even seen me since I was a child. Well, I got near him. I worked for years to get near him. No, I wish I hadn't.
Now, look here, you've got to pull yourself together.
Why? Who cares?
That's the ambulance coming and maybe the police.
What do I care? Tell the police what you like.
My dear girl, you don't think I'll tell them anything. I'm merely an onlooker. An amateur Satan who doesn't believe in ghost voices.
Mary Ellen.
What's that?
Templeton, his eyes are open. He's trying to get up.
Mary Ellen.
It's as though he could see something that we can't
What's
see.
That he's got in his hand?
It's a revolver. He had one at the club.
He's putting it against his chest. I'll stop him.
Look out!
Oh, he did love her after all. And now he's tried to join her. Oh, don't let him die.
He's all right, Molly. You grabbed the gun just in time.
If he doesn't die, I'll make it up to him. I swear I'll make it up to him.
I tell you now, he's not going to die, but...
Mary Ellen.
What?
Mary Ellen.
But what? But what?
Mary Ellen.
I was just wondering, is there a ghost in this room tonight?
Dead Sleep Lightly, starring Walter Hamden, Susan Hayward, and Lee Bowman. Tonight's tale of suspense. This is your narrator, the man in black, who conveys to you Columbia's invitation to spend this half hour in suspense with us again next Tuesday. As Hayward appears through the courtesy of Paramount Pictures, Mr. Bowman appears with the courtesy of Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer Studios. William Spear, the producer, John Dietz, the director, Bernard Herrmann, the composer, conductor, and John Dixon Carr, the author, collaborated on tonight's Suspense.
I thought that sounded a bit like Bernard Herrmann's work. Lucky guess.
This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.
Well, it's on at CBS.
That's right.
And another fine, fine story. Hey, do we are we going to learn anything from this at all?
I didn't learn anything. I don't know about you guys.
I learned nothing. How about you? Come on, CW.
What did I learn?
It's your turn.
I admit it. I did it. I did it, and I'm glad I did it. I did it. I do it again.
Fine. Come up with them all. Erie House Radio proudly presents A Garrulous Moral of the Story. Or not.
Oh.
I told you.
Do you really want me to?
I didn't learn nothing. I didn't learn nothing from this one. I'm sorry.
Well, fine, fine. Let me see if I can think of something quickly on the fly. The moral of this story is just remember, your kids will get back at you eventually. So just watch what you do. So there.
We'll take it.
Ah, Johnny Weissmuller approved.
Oh, right.
You can't get a higher recommendation that I'm aware of.
Yep, that or else he stubbed his toe, one or the other.
Yeah.
One, the other. The only thing that's better than that is Carol Burnett's rendition of Johnny Weissmuller.
Yeah, it's amazing what she did there.
Yes.
She belted
that. By the way,
right,
happy
out.
Birthday. Yeah, and I believe this month is her happy birthday. She is the big 90.
90.
Yep. And she looks pretty decent, I'll tell you that.
Yeah. Okay.
I'm
going to
look
Shatner
like a piece of bacon by then.
What can one say? She has the skin of the rich.
Yes. The skin of the rich. I like that. Mm. They have their own skin brand.
Oh, yes, they do. They have their own tax bracket and their own skin.
It's amazing the people they get it from. Anyway, we got another sleepy tale tomorrow that'll keep you wide awake. From CBS Radio Mystery Theater, Sleepy Village.
Yeah.
That's at 6:30 Eastern. Yep. If you want to catch the live show like Fogsbane and GGSI Paper and good old Bob have done often. Gosh, we'd be so, so terribly, terribly lonely without you guys. I mean, it would be...
Yeah.
It would be a very sad thing, you know?
I'm crying in my Lipton tea.
All right, there we go.
Good thing you have my waterproof tea bags now.
Yeah.
There you are.
Never have to worry about that again.
Absolutely.
And it's environmentally
friendly.
It's environmentally friendly. Don't forget
that
in your advertising campaign, Dave.
Yeah, well, environmentally, because it never uses any tea leaves because it's waterproof.
Yeah, yeah, it's very environmentally safe to have your waterproof.
It is perpetual.
Yep. Tea bags.
Absolutely. Lipton will be knocking at your door any second now.
It's the everlasting gobstopper of tea is what it is.
Oh, wait, you know, like, that just means they want to buy me out and hide this great idea. But if they pay me enough, that's okay.
There you go.
Yep.
For example, I have that great idea. A tablet you put in your gas tank, add a little water, and you never need gas. A petroleum company.
Yep.
They bought that from Grandpa Munster.
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
There you go.
Yep, they've been hiding it.
Yep. Darn you, Big Oil. Oh, gosh. We got to chatting. We forgot all about Vince. We will see you tomorrow night, 6:30 Eastern. And there'll be some rendition of some kind, I'm sure, of Gar the Ghoul on his Horrible Horror starring Gar the Ghoul That'll be tomorrow at 8 on the Twitches. So let's wish him a safe recovery. Good night and good luck in prison. I timed that perfectly.
How do you go from guard to good luck in prison? I don't know.
It's just part of my rambling I picked up from my DJ days. I would sometimes end the night with that. Safe them up and drive home drinkly. Good luck in prison. Various and assorted catchphrases that mean nothing.
Or everything.
Best of luck with the breathalyzer.
Lucky to be alive.
No,
you're not,
I am. Aren't we all? Aren't we all? I mean,
yes.
All the years we sat in the front seat shotgun and didn't have all those seat belts in all the places, didn't have car seats and didn't have, you know, rode around in the back end of the station wagon and in that little extra seat compartment that they have there. And yet we're still alive today to talk about it.
Before seatbelts, all you had was your mom's flabby forearm to stop you from flying through the windshield, you know? And that was it.
Well, you don't have that anymore because mom gets plastic surgery to get rid of the bat wing. So that's gone.
Bat wings. Sounds like a taste treat. Get your bat wings. Bat wings. We got them. That's something the Munsters might enjoy. Maybe not, though. They had them as pets, so maybe not.
Yeah. Isn't Igor one of their grandpa's favorites?
I think so. By gosh, I think you're right. Igor.
Oh, absolutely. And don't forget Spot that was under the stairs.
Spot lives under the stairs. He is a good puppy.
Oh, yes.
Cute puppy.
Absolutely.
Except
when
he breaks out
and
walks the neighborhood,
There you are. There you are. And I can't remember Morticia Adams had her favorite pet plant she fed him.
Cleopatra.
There you are. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. It was actually green. Most people don't know that. Sorry. It's another public commentary.
I always wanted to have a Venus flytrap, but those things are so delicate. You would think for a bloodthirsty little plant, it would have more vigor, but they're very delicate.
Yeah.
Yeah, they are.
Our neighbor across the street had one, and if you gave it hamburger, half the time it would kill it.
Who knows what's in the hamburger? Poor thing. Oh, what do you do? Get indigestion, give it a Pepto or something?
I don't know. Poor little thing. I know my wife would love it. If we have one, my wife would love it, and she would make it thrive. There'd be a very good chance that she would make it thrive.
If you decide to go missing on one of the shows...
Check the vases and plant pots around the house. I'll probably be in one.
Check the planter for a great big thriving piece of greenery.
Big gob of goo, which is what's left of me after the giant Venus flytrap.
Yeah.
Named Audrey.
Oh, yeah.
Gets me.
Yep.
Oh, yes.
Audrey. Audrey. True.
Yeah.
Audrey, too.
There you go. See?
Yes. I mean, there are a lot of carnivorous plants. I'm just surprised that there was never a plant, at least none that's ever been found, that was big enough to, say, swallow a person. You know?
Lost
I'm surprised
in Space
someone...
had one.
Yes, they did.
Oh, yeah.
Grabbed Judy, didn't it?
I think so.
I think it grabbed Judy.
But then back then, I wanted to grab Judy, too, so, I don't know whether that counts or not.
She made a fine mermaid.
Wasn't there a planet that tried to change Dr. Smith into a plant?
Oh, God. That's the infamous.
That was one of the last.
Rebellion.
Yeah.
So,
the writers admitted they absolutely had no idea what to do. So somebody had this idea and they ran with it. It was just. They can't believe they wrote it.
I am just so disappointed because that would have been a perfect time to do a contest. Write a script for Lost in Space, and the winner gets your script done and gets a visit on the set. Can you imagine the best publicity ever?
Oh, my gosh. That's genius. CW, that is seriously, that is genius. You are now in charge of our marketing department.
Promotion department.
I can do it, too. I can do it. I mean, there are so many people out there. It's just like Britain's Got Talent. You remember that Susan Boyle? Boyle singer. I mean, came out there looking absolutely dowdy and blew the doors off the place. Because she just never had an opportunity to really go out there and give it a go.
Yeah. But boy, what a voice, huh?
Yeah.
Incredible.
What a voice. I dreamed a dream a thousand times, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, you know, from Les Mis.
Yep.
Cool beans.
Yep.
But anyway, yep. So if anybody's listening out there, if you need somebody for your PR department or your ad department, I'm your Huckleberry.
Yeah, I do. for Erie House.
Let's see. Well, let's think about that for a quick second here now.
Okay. If this turns into a serious discussion, we'll have this offline.
There you go.
Yeah, because I may just actually come up with an idea that somebody may want to rip off. I mean, that's how Lost in Space got started. They ripped off Star Trek. Or CBS ripped off Gene Roddenberry.
Maybe to some degree. I mean, they were the only space shows at the time.
Wasn't Lost in Space before? Wasn't Lost in Space before Star Trek?
Nope, it was the other way around. He was trying to sell Star Trek, and he went to CBS before he went to NBC. And CBS said, thank you, no thank you. But they said, maybe.
Yeah, let's
and
do this a little different.
I'm going to put a little spin on it, like the Swiss Family Robinson. Mm-hmm. They ripped that story off, and they ripped him off. And then they came up with Lost in Space.
I don't know. I like Irwin Allen's stuff. That, Time Tunnel.
I do like him.
Land of the Giants even was halfway decent.
Oh, yeah. And Voyage to the Bottom of the Sea.
Voyage was a good show. And his disaster movies did well, too.
Oh,
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
The Towering Inferno. Was it Airport?
I don't know if he did Airport. Yeah, I don't know if he did Airport.
No, he did Earthquake. He did Towering Inferno. He blew up everything. Volcanoes, earthquake, tidal waves, meteor. Did he do a meteor strike? You think he did meteors and everything? Did you hear that NASA had a successful experiment with pushing an asteroid away.
Really?
Yeah, at least taking it. At least sending it off course, yeah.
That's the idea. We now have planetary defense.
From planets.
who knew space was Space Force was a real thing?
That's
Space Force. Space Force. something.
Why do I feel like it'd be something like Spaceballs in the end? It'd be great if life was exactly how Mel Brooks envisioned.
Yes, with your absolutely Mel Brooks.
Sometimes it is.
Leader of Space Force. Absolutely. Mel Brooks, leader of Space Force, History of the World, Part 5.
There you go. Which means I still have some, that reminds me, I have some viewing to do.
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
You know, because in this, you're talking about the stealing ideas in the first episode. You got to see how Shakespeare, they had Shakespeare in like a, if Shakespeare were in a TV writer's room and he was stealing everybody's ideas and keeping it himself and stuff. But it was absolutely hilarious. Absolutely hilarious.
That sounds like fun.
It does. But gentlemen, I must be away, for I have to do some dive into the trenches of consumerism and do some shopping. So with that said,
okay.
I bid you adieu, and I say, yeah, just call it a night. That's it. Forget it. It's done. It's over. Finish. Lock the doors. Close the windows. Mr. Durante, play us out.
It was all about dreams.
It was.
Meow, 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 meow